Welcome to Responsa Radio, where you ask and we answer questions of Jewish law in modern times. I'm Rabbi Avi Killip, here with Rabbi Ethan Tucker, Rosh Yeshiva at Machon Hadar, a center for higher Jewish learning based in New York City. How are you doing today?
Good, I'm doing great.
All right, so every week I introduce Responsa Radio as answering questions of Jewish law in modern times, and that is exactly what today's question is about. How do we fit Jewish ritual into modern times? The person writes, when does one say Tfilat HaDerech, which is the traveler's prayer, given how different modern travel is from ancient travel? A very long trip, a plane, to train, across the ocean, to another train, might be very far, but have no increased risk over my daily life. Does weather matter? What about population density? Or how long I'll be gone? Is this ultimately a gut check, i.e., do I feel substantially more unsafe? Or are there hard and fast rules that are applicable in our world?
Great question. One of the things I just want to say as a preface is the prayer, Tfilat HaDerech, is a very old prayer. And in some ways, the way you can tell that is it doesn't quite fit the forms that we're used to. Right? Those who are familiar with this prayer, it starts with Yehi Ratzon, and then it ends with a Baruch Atah Hashem formulation at the end. It starts just with saying, oh, may it be your will. And later brachot, like later blessings and prayers, generally always start with Baruch. I always start with that sort of formula that, you know, gets us into the formal structure of prayer. And one of the theories about why Tfilat HaDerech doesn't follow those rules is that it predates those rules, right? And there's something, what made me think of this is when the questioner talks about a gut check. There is an aspect of this Tfilat HaDerech, which even as we'll get into all kinds of rules that surround it, in many ways has its origins in a gut check, has its origins in a certain degree of instinctive instability, fear, uncertainty around travel. And for those of us who hate packing, of which I'm, you know, definitely squarely a member of that group, what we hate about it is there's something very unsettling about going from one place to another. And so I want to kind of affirm that there's a little bit of a messiness to this question, even as we'll try to make a little order to it, and that's because it's a really primordial old ritual. So the first text that we have that really jumps into this is in the Talmud. And right off the bat, we get really interesting different modes and themes of thinking about this. So there is a statement that's made to one of the sages here who's talking about traveling. And he's told as follows, when you go on a trip, consult your master and go. He malech bekoncha vitze. And then the text clarifies, how do you do that? You do that by saying Tfilat HaDerech. Now, consulting your master,
it's like check in with God.
Yeah, check in with God. And I think even there's a sense here, and some of the texts of the Talmud even reflect this, you have to get permission. Right? It's almost like you think about like a kid needs to like ask the teacher to go to the bathroom. It's like before you go off on some whole trip, check in with God and essentially pray for it to be an auspicious journey in some way. Consult with God. Right? That's the sort of opening line. Then we hear another tradition that says anyone who goes on a trip must pray Tfilat HaDerech. And then it gives the text. And the text, which many are familiar with today, has nothing to do with consulting God or checking in, and is all about, please, 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 please protect me, and I don't want anything horrible to happen to me. Pur aniyot, the fear of catastrophe. Get me to my place in peace. L'shalom, 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 repeats over and over in that prayer, which is much more grounded in a real fear that I will somehow be harmed, maybe even killed along the way. Those are two very different motivations for breaking into prayer or ritual, one of which I would say argues for a much more expansive use. That is to say, the one that's about consulting with God and checking in before a journey, that feels like it may make sense anytime you go on almost any kind of trip. Whereas when you're talking about fear, that seems like it's more tailor-made for the kinds of journeys where you're actually worried that you're unsafe.
Yeah, there's something about also the specifics in the text itself of the things that, you know, that could happen to you that make it feel very like fear-based. It both makes it feel so modern and so ancient that you're like, well, pirates, you know, not exactly worried about pirates. But if you said like, I hope I don't get mugged, then that suddenly feels very relevant and contemporary. It makes it both ancient and modern at the same time.
That's right. And there's a lot of people that I know personally, and then there's, you know, texts of the prayer that you can find, which explicitly add things in like Te'unot Drachim, car accidents, right? Or various other things to really make it reflect, well, what are the things that I'm actually afraid of in this journey? But nonetheless, the whole framing of fear, as opposed to, hey, part of what I do when I travel is reach out to God, the same way, you know, part of what I do when I get up in the morning is I pray to God. I praise God for having had sight returned to me, all sorts of things of that. You can certainly imagine a frame of Tfilat HaDerech that's just entirely around, you know, Jews say blessings and prayers for all the significant things that they do in life. Travel is one of them. That's a very different frame than protecting me from fear.
Right. So in that first frame, do I say Tfilat HaDerech every morning on my morning commute the same way that I say it over breakfast? You know, I reach out to God over breakfast and I reach out to God over opening my eyes for the first time. Do I also recite Tfilat HaDerech every single day that I commute? Or is it something that I'm going to reserve for those longer trips or bigger trips or more dangerous trips?
Yeah, I think for most of these sorts of halachic discussions, the philosophy gets played out through the details. So for that, we need to go just a little further in the Talmudic passage, and then we'll be able to understand how different authorities kind of play this out. So after saying, okay, you have to pray this prayer and giving at least one version of a text of it, the Talmud then says, well, when do you pray it? And Rav Chisda says, from the time when you set out on your way. All right, so in other words, you're clearly supposed to do it more or less at the beginning, like once you're, you know, out of the city is the way that's usually interpreted, or at least, you know, out of your neighborhood, whatever it is, you're sort of beyond your normal radius of home. And then the Talmud says, in very cryptic language, ad kama, which we could translate as how much, or until when, or until how much, we'll come back to that, to which Rav Chisda says, ad parsa. A parsa is about 4 kilometers. Okay? So what is going on here? Okay? There is a guideline that's clear here, which is something to do with this 4 kilometer distance, you know, between 2 and 3 miles, something like that. But what exactly does the text mean? What is it getting at? And you have a, first off, very straightforward early medieval split on interpretation. The Halachot Gedolot, who's from the Gaonic period, says that the parsa here, the 4 kilometers, that's the minimum journey length that triggers the obligation to say this blessing. Meaning, only if the trip is 4 kilometers long or more, do you say Tfilat HaDerech. Anything that's less than that, it just counts as like walking around your neighborhood or going nearby. All right, so he reads the ad kama as how long must the journey be in order to kick in the obligation to say this prayer. That's one reading. But Rashi says something different. He thinks ad kama means until when on a journey are you allowed to say this prayer. Just as we said, you're supposed to start saying it from the time you leave. Well, what if you don't remember? How long do you have into the journey before it's sort of expired, right? You know, think about if you're supposed to say a blessing over an apple before you bite into it, right? If you took the first bite of the apple and you forgot, then before you take the next bite, you should still say the blessing. But if you finish the entire apple and threw out the core and there's nothing left, At that point, you don't say the blessing of Borei Priya Eitz anymore. It's too late. You've done the thing in question. Rashi thinks that's the frame here and says Ad Parsa means you only say Tfilat HaDerech within the first 4 kilometers of the journey. After that point, you're enough on your way, it doesn't make sense to ask God for this kind of protection or to check in. We'll get to those two frames in a second. But that's the kind of interpretational dispute of this phrase in the Talmud.
So Rashi's definitely thinking of this as the God check-in model, because if this was a, you say it at the point when you feel afraid, then we would say it doesn't matter if you're thousands of miles from home. When the turbulence hits, that's when you daven. That's when you start saying this particular prayer.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a very plausible reading. That Rashi, even though he's aware of the text of the prayer being about protecting you, does feel like, yeah, there's something about that beginning, which is the time when you haven't yet begun. And it's almost like you could imagine him saying, until 4 kilometers, you might consider going back, like, you know, for something you've forgotten or something pressing. Once you're further along than that, you're on the trip and doesn't make sense to check in at that point. I think that's a nice reading.
Right. Well, it's also in the check-in frame. It's like if a parent telling a child, you can't call me from the city limits and ask me if it's okay to go away for spring break. You have to ask me before you get there.
That's nice. That's good. Yeah. I think that's really good. So what do you say about Halachot Gedolot? Does he clearly fit into one frame or the other here?
So Halachot Gedolot is the opinion that's telling us it depends how far you're going. If you go at least that far, then suddenly that triggers the need to say this blessing, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know. That one I could see going either way. In some ways, I still think that's a check-in again, because it's not saying, well, you decide when to say it based on how dangerous the road is. It's more prescriptive in terms of, you must say it at this time, at this distance from home. So I think actually I would put both opinions into that first model. What do you think?
All right. So I think you can definitely make the case that Halachot Gedolot is also in the first model. In other words, if it's not far enough, then it's just not worth a check-in. But I think, you know, what you started to articulate and I think is important to recognize is also possible here is you can, in a way that seems harder to do with Rashi, you can with Halachot Gedolot see this as an assessment of, okay, but like what's a significant enough thing that it is worth being nervous and, you know, asking God for protection? And in particular, that is true if you think about Halachot Gedolot and Rashi as kind of contrasting uses of the category of parsa, of this 4 kilometer distance. Because think about it. For Rashi, he says, you've got to complete the prayer within the first 4 kilometers. But it seems like Rashi, therefore, also is certainly consistent with the idea that a journey smaller than 4 kilometers would also require Tfilat HaDerech. It would just mean that's the kind of thing that's short enough that you could say it at any point along the way. But Rashi doesn't have any text in the Talmud, as he reads it, that specifies any minimum length, right? It's basically, whenever you understand yourself to be going on a trip, you should say Tfilat HaDerech. The only limitation is, if it's a really long trip, you got to do it right at the beginning for it to be meaningful.
When you read the Rashi, does it sound to you like he means your daily commute? Like he's imagining this is a regular occurrence?
All right, we'll come back to that. I agree. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what Rashi's lower limit is on that. But again, I think as you pointed out, if Rashi really seems consistent with the notion of check in with your creator, it's not unreasonable that your daily commute would be included in that, because you would say, as you put it, I get up every morning and I, in a, you know, maybe sometimes in a more mechanical way, thank and reach out to God about all kinds of basic things of my functioning. Sure, my commute is one of those things. So I'm reflecting on that. I don't think that's a stretch. It's not the only possible reading of Rashi, but it's certainly a plausible one. Halachot Gedolot, though, now think about it from the other perspective. Halachot Gedolot, by insisting that there's a minimum journey length that triggers this blessing, also implies thereby that he doesn't think there really is a Talmudic text that weighs in on by when you need to say it. And that then suggests if Halachot Gedolot thinks it's okay for you to say it any time during a trip, like ideally you should say at the beginning, but if there's no formal cutoff, that does tend to push it more towards a discourse of, well, as long as you're still on the way and there's some kind of danger involved, then maybe you should say it. All right, this is at least what triggered some discussion in the Middle Ages in evaluating these two positions. The Rosh, Rav Asher ben Yechiel, in 13th century Germany and Spain, he takes up this question. There's Rashi and there's Halachot Gedolot, and he sides with Halachot Gedolot. And here's what his basis is. He says, if you go less than a parsa, less than 4 kilometers, then there's no danger involved in such a short trip. And therefore, not only do you not say it on a journey that's less than a parsa, less than 4 kilometers, but you also don't say it when you have that little left in the journey. Okay? So he takes for granted, basically, he says, the whole discourse here of Halachot Gedolot is assuming that this is about danger. That is the right frame to think about this through. Therefore, Halachot Gedolot is right. Therefore, we don't make people say things on little short trips that they do every day. It's only things of significance. But that creates an interesting limit, which is, he also says, though, you have to evaluate if you're almost at the tail end of a journey where the danger has essentially passed, then at that point, it's no longer appropriate to say Tfilat HaDerech anymore. So you don't have to do it right at the beginning, but you do have to do it when there's still a stretch in front of you that you're nervous about.
I read something once that said most muggings happen very close to home, or the closer you are to home, that's sort of when people let their guard down. You say, well, now I'm on the street, so you could walk from here. And it occurs to me also with plane flights that most plane crashes happen right when you're taking off, or mostly right when you're landing, right when you feel like, okay, I could let my guard down. And it makes me, this comment that you're saying makes me realize, of course there's danger when you're staying home or when you're almost there, but that maybe it's trying to convey that it's unhealthy to have a mental space of fear all the time. Like you can't, every time you leave your house, even just to go to the grocery store, have a sort of framing awareness of the danger that you could be in. It would be too much in every moment, and that to some extent we should reserve that fear for longer trips, because otherwise it would just be crippling.
That's interesting. That's an interesting kind of psychological reading of what's at stake here for preferring Halachot Gedolot over Rashi. That's really interesting. Shulchan Aruch goes in that direction and endorses Rosh and says, you know, we don't, for every tiny trip, engage this ritual. It's got to be something of some significant length. And what that then kicks in, which the questioner is really asking about here, is once you're sensitive to the notion that, let's say, the tail end of the journey, already at least in terms of your mentality, maybe not in terms of facts, as you're pointing out, but in terms of your mentality, no longer feels as dangerous, does that extend to all kinds of other modes of travel where we don't feel that way? So I heard a story, I heard it told, that Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, when he was kind of going back and forth between his base in Boston and Yeshiva University, he would, you know, he would often be driven by someone. And the story was told that as the student was driving him, I think it was back from New York to Boston, he pulled over to the side of the road to say Tfilat HaDerech. And that Rav Soloveitchik kind of looked at him and said, really? He went, okay, fine. If you want to do that, do it. And the theory was essentially for him, this was essentially a normal commute. Even though it wasn't done every single day, he felt that that was simply part of his routine. And that the category of Yotzei Laderech was meant to be something of, I'm going on an unusual trip. There's something disorienting around this where I feel a little less confidence and I'd like some support. And that's a kind of extension of saying, well, if the last 4 kilometers of the journey, I'm already comfortable, I know where I'm going, I don't feel lost in the same way, so I shouldn't say Tfilat HaDerech. That ultimately ought to be extended to any kind of trip that feels totally routine and secure to me.
Yeah, well, I love that example because I did that exact commute for a full year between Boston and New York on the Acela train, on the Amtrak train. And I basically every time asked myself the question, well, should I say Tfilat HaDerech? I'm going on a train. I don't usually go on a train, but I actually go on a train every week. And so is this exceptional or not?
Yeah, so I think, you know, to the extent you have that instinct, and maybe also to sort of explain what that student was motivated by, I wonder if there was an implicit return to the kind of, you know, checking in with your creator mode here, which is sure, from the perspective of fear and danger, it didn't necessarily feel like this warranted Tfilat HaDerech. But at the same time, it was a trip. It was like a big deal. You know, it was a major part of my day. And it felt like, oh, there's a Jewish ritual to mark this. I should do that. Going back to the questioner's gut check question, you know, there's some sort of element there, not just a gut check of safety, but a gut check of, am I doing something significant here? And therefore, I should mark it. And I think, you know, Rev Soloveitchik's response, at least as told in that story, is helpful because he clearly avoided the kind of extreme binary of, well, either it's obligatory to do it or it's taking God's name in vain, right? There was sort of a sense of, I don't think this is necessary. I wouldn't do this. But someone who felt, and I think this is quite common practice, this trip is long enough, it's enough defining what my day is today that I should have a Jewish response to it, that's okay. It doesn't necessarily have to be completely clear-cut as to whether it's 100% obligatory for it to be appropriate, even with invoking God's name, to say this blessing and to do this ritual.
Right. So that response, to my mind, puts us back into the fear, and maybe fear is a little bit too strong of a word, but it's into the fear mode in terms of that's actually something that's subjective. I may not be afraid on my drive from between Boston and New York because I've done it so many times, and you may have a lot of anxiety around that trip, and that puts us in different places in terms of whether or not we need this blessing in that moment.
So, you know, the one other dimension here, which we haven't touched on, but is probably the practically most relevant one, is parsa meant to be a measure of distance or time? Parsa, I translated as 4 kilometers because that, of course, is the unit. It is technically a unit of length, but was it shorthand for time? It's going to take you 72 minutes. It's going to take you an hour and a quarter, is what we normally, you know, estimate with that kind of distance, to walk it. And the idea is that, yeah, if you were on a horse or if you were on something else that went faster, that doesn't matter. That just means it's going to get there faster. But it's really supposed to be about being a certain physical distance away from your point of origin. Or no, is it about time? It's about this is the experience of being out that long. And if you're on a horse or a car or a boat or a plane, it should still be judged by that standard of duration. And the technology should actually affect the application of this halakha. So the Mishnah Brura says it's distance. And even if you're on a train, I mean, he doesn't yet have airplanes, but even if you're on a train, and certainly if you're on a horse, they had horses in the time of the Talmud. They didn't tell us a distinction about that. And therefore, even small journeys, you, in fact, say Tfilat HaDerech. Rav Ovadia Yosef said, no, it's time. It's 72-minute journeys or more. And anything less than that, you should not say Tfilat HaDerech. So, you know, the most common thing of that is you've got a situation where a person has to just drive to the next town over for half an hour, right? It's much more than 4 kilometers, but it's not how long it would have taken them to walk a parsa. Do you, in that context, say tefillat haderech? My own personal practice is to follow Rav Avadya Yosef on this. Without the length of time, it's very hard for me to, in any intuitive way that makes the ritual make any sense, do it for, you know, something that's technically the distance, but just doesn't take that much time in the day. And if someone asked me about, you know, their commute, let's say their train commute in the morning, that was, you know, less than an hour and 15 minutes, I would hope for them. I would say, yeah, you don't say Tefillat HaDerech on that, not only because perhaps, you know, following Rav Soloveitchik, it's too routine to qualify, but it just doesn't feel like that is long enough. But I want to share one interesting compromise practice, which I heard about years ago, which some people may find useful, which was by Rav Yehuda Mital, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshivat Har Etzion, which is, you know, not very far south of Yerushalayim. And he would frequently make trips from Alon Shvut, where he was based with the yeshiva there, up to Yerushalayim, and it was exactly in that interval where, in terms of distance, it's longer than 4 kilometers, but in terms of time, it's much less than 72 minutes. And what he would do, it was reported, was he didn't feel comfortable going against Rav Avadya Yosef and saying Tefillat HaDerech with God's name for such a short journey. But he also didn't feel comfortable going such a long distance and avoiding the Mishnah Brura's directive that qualified. So what would he do? Tefillat HaDerech, of course, ends with Baruch Atah Hashem Shomea Tefillah. Whatever was the last Amidah that he would pray prior to going on his trip, he would insert Tefillat HaDerech into the bracha of Shomea Tefillah in the Amidah. And that way he would essentially fulfill, you know, the Mishnah Berurah's requirement, but sort of swallowed up in a larger liturgical framework that was praying for other things. You know, for some people that'll feel like, oh my God, that's like too much to think about. And for other people, that'll be an incredibly beautiful example of what it is to kind of live in a full matrix of liturgy and to know how you can balance kind of different positions and different perspectives by interweaving different pieces. But I wanted to share that because I think at least some listeners may find that useful as a way of balancing those two.
It's also an excellent example of how daily prayer practice or multiple times daily prayer practice can help you have perspective and awareness on everything that's happening in your life, even things that may not immediately seem to be part of or connected to that prayer practice, that it's not just time you take out from your day, it becomes a part of your day and helps you, you know, take a moment to stop and think, okay, what else am I doing today? And what kind of intentions and check-ins do I need to do in order to confront those?
Yeah, it's a very nice example of that spiritual awareness.
So we've discussed a lot of different approaches. And I think what I love about this question is that it brought up different frames, not just for how to understand this particular ritual, but really to understand life and when we feel safe and when we don't feel safe, and you know, the changes when we talk about this as a modern question, the changes in the speed with which we move around and the distance within which we can move, and how often our lives now take us so much further away, and how important it is to figure out really how this tefillah and how our interactions and check-ins with God play into this new, fast, distant, globalized modern world. So thank you. Have a halachic question you'd like answered on the show? Email us at halacha@machonhadar.org. And you can also leave us a phone message at 215-297-4255. 4254. Responsa Radio is a project of the Center for Jewish Law and Values at Machon Hadar and is produced by Jewish Public Media, which creates, curates, and promotes excellent Jewish content. Relaxation is easing into me. 24 miles to Cleveland and I'll be free.